as we look at the map of Central Asia, we are looking at a huge area which has about 70 million people living in it. Mm-hmm. And obviously the region has a lot of environmental issues. Mm-hmm. If we were to look country by country, what would you see are the most pressing problems in each of them?
You know, actually there are lots of environmental problems, but they are similar. So if you don't mind, I'm not going to do it country by country,
sure,
but talk regionally. And I want to talk of three things, really. The first is climate. The second is natural resource management. And the third is pollution. Because the problems are similar across the countries. Talking first of climate, you know, you're from the region, that the waters in the region are fed by glaciers and by snowpack. And snow is an amazing thing. I mean, literally a miracle of nature. You have the snowfall in winter. It stays there up there on the mountains, kind of locked away. And when it gets warmer, it turns to water and it comes down in the growing season. So it comes exactly when it's needed, the water. When it gets too warm, what happens is it comes too fast. And when it comes too fast, you get floods. And then in the growing season, when you need the water, there isn't enough. So what happens is you get droughts. So you get both floods and droughts. And what has happened already, we know that temperatures in the region, average annual temperatures, are much higher, 0.6 of a degree higher in the south and 1.5 degrees higher in the north. And what that has meant is that already since the 1900s, the glaciers have lost a third of their volume. And we also know that we've had those floods and droughts in the lowlands. And that, I think, is a serious challenge now. But looking forward is going to be an even bigger challenge. The World Bank came out with a report to turn down the heat. It's called Confronting the New Climate Normal. And that basically projects that the glaciers could lose 50% of their volume in a 2 degrees centigrade warmer world. If the world is 4 degrees centigrade warmer, they could lose 75% of their volume. Not only that, there'll be kind of periods of heat extremes. And if you look at all of that together, it basically means that there'll be too much water coming down too quickly. And then in the latter half of the century, there'll be too little water because the glaciers won't be there.
So it's like environmental issues plus the global warming. It's a huge challenge for the governments. How do you start addressing these issues? What can governments do to, let's say, to decrease global warming in the region? Is it possible?
Well, global warming, firstly, is a global phenomenon. It's very difficult to keep the air in one place. You know, it goes across boundaries. What the governments are doing, and you're absolutely right, the environmental challenges of how land is used, air and water pollution are massive in the region, but the governments are already doing a lot about it. With pollution, you kind of have to look at two aspects. There's what I call stock, so it's pollution that's already in the ground, you know, that's happened because historically from heavy metal, heavy industries, from extraction, mining, and so forth. And then there's what I call the flow, which is the pollution that's happening now. Now, the pollution that's happening now, countries and governments typically tackle that by strengthening their regulations, environmental regulations, and enforcing it, because they have to give all the right signals for people not to behave badly, if you will. In terms of the pollution that's there, the stock pollution, the historical pollution, the governments are beginning to do quite a bit already.
Any examples?
Well, the bank, for example, you were talking about pollution, mercury pollution. The bank, working together with the government of Kazakhstan, supported Kazakhstan to clean up mercury pollution from the Nura River. Now, there, that was a carbide factory for 50 years. You know, they produced something like 1,500 tons of mercury that went into the water system. And it was there, so you can imagine with, I think the population is like 170,000 people in that area. And mercury is, the WHO says, you know, affects the central nervous system, your liver, your kidneys. And through that project, 2 million tons of contaminated soil in a 3,500-hectare area were cleaned up. And it's clean now. So, you know, you can do something about it. It's tough, but governments are trying.
What you hear a lot in the region is that, well, we're predominantly agricultural countries, so we don't really have to worry about industrial pollution, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you talk to the farmers, they say they complain of two things. One is the lack of water when they need it, mm-hmm. and the second is the quality of soil. They complain of soil erosion. Mm-hmm. These are major environmental issues too, right, for the region?
Absolutely right, absolutely right. And actually 50 to 75% of that population that you talked about in the region lives in the rural areas and are mainly subsistence farmers, pastoralists. Again, the bank actually just came out with a report this week. It's called Shock Waves. It looks specifically at climate and the effect of climate shocks on the poor, so on poverty. And essentially that report says that the shocks of climate, so changing climate, can actually affect the gains that we can get from poverty eradication. So people, and you know this, I mean, you're a farmer, if your crop doesn't grow, if there isn't enough water, it floods, it's wiped out for that year, it's a massive economic loss. So it's what brings people back down into poverty or keeps them in poverty. So these are absolutely critical issues that apply very much in this region.
And we know that the World Bank runs several projects to help the region. Could you talk about some of them who are actually happening right now, who are taking place as we speak?
I'm happy to. There's one that's actually ongoing, focused exactly on this issue. And one that just recently closed. So let me tell you first about those, and then I'll come to a new one, which is actually pretty exciting. The two, that one that's ongoing, there's an environmental land management and rural livelihoods project in Tajikistan. And basically that project is helping farmers, predominantly farmers in the rural areas, improve land management practices. Exactly what you're talking about, so that water is used more efficiently, you have less soil erosion, and it's already that project kind of has reached 35,000 people, beneficiaries.
That's not much.
It's not much, but 45% are women, which I think is also important. A project in Kazakhstan focused on forests, because forests, trees, that, you know, it's the roots that hold that land so that you don't get the landslides when there's too much water, and helps to make sure that there's less siltation in the rivers. But also sometimes it's providing energy in terms of heat, you know, for the families, or they use the forest for other economic products. That project was focusing very much on rehabilitating forest land and the rangelands, and so rehabilitating Irtysh pine forest, helping with better land management practices in the rangelands. And that project was just closed, covered 250,000 hectares of land. One of the areas was actually linked with rehabilitating or revegetating the Dry Aral seabed. And it was really interesting because the Uzbeks and the Kazakhs, it was a project in Kazakhstan, actually collaborated to see how they could get, you know, rehabilitate and get that vegetation going and how they could attract the diversity back. So two examples of ongoing or just recently closed. But the one I want to tell you about is the project that was approved by our board last week, actually the week before, November 3rd. It's a regional project focused on, it's actually a program, the Climate Adaptation and Mitigation Program for the Aral Sea Basin. And that project is essentially tries to build awareness among stakeholders. And the stakeholders are farmers to government agencies. And it tries to build awareness both of climate change as well as what are appropriate responses. And in addition, it tries to help people build particularly community, rural communities, be more climate resilient. It involves all of the five countries. In this first of a series of projects, Uzbekistan and Tajikistan, and the Executive Committee for the International Fund for Saving the Aral Sea are the recipients.
The drying of the Aral Sea has undoubtedly been one of the devastating disasters of our time. And you've been studying the region for a long time. Has there been any progress in terms of saving the area? We know that the sea is continuing to dry, but we know that there has been some progress on the Kazakh side. But anything that you can point to, because we've been talking about how bad things are for a long time. We keep on repeating the same facts. But the international community has also been working on it for decades now. Any progress you see?
I'm not an expert on the Aral Sea. We do have experts on that. But what I can tell you, knowing about climate involves really two or three things. One is being much more efficient in terms of our use of these resources. One of the things this area suffers from is, if you like, it's known as water and energy intensive, which means you're not really maximizing the economic production that you can get from that use of energy and water. So I think a major path forward in terms of being more resilient to climate is being very conscious of your energy and water use at an individual level, as well as at a broader community and a business level. Just being conscious that literally those drops of water or the energy that you use needs to be conserved and used. It is a very precious resource. Sometimes we think of lots of things as being available, and whether it's the tap running and it's running, and you're washing your hands and the amount of time it takes and the amount of water that just goes through. So even simple things like that make a huge difference, and that's at an individual level. And as we talk about communities, businesses, being more conscious of how environmental, whether it's waste, whether it's emissions to the air and water, are handled in a proper way, abiding by the regulations. Ultimately, the environment is about the future of our Earth and actually the future of our children.
So, as you know, accountability is a major factor here. How to hold who accountable for these issues? Obviously, you have to hold the relevant sides accountable so that you start working on the solutions.
I think for me, accountability kind of lies with everybody, because accountability is about doing the right thing and doing the right thing at every level. So accountability lies, as I said, with the individual, with communities, with the private sector, with the government. The government has a role in terms of putting in place regulations, in a way to change behavior in such a way that people are more conscious of resources, and also of sanctioning bad behavior.
And then, of course, the decision-making, lies with the government mainly. We know that the World Bank has been, running several projects over the years with countries, mm-hmm. and then now there is more focus on regional projects. Mm-hmm. How different are they? And what are the challenges that you could talk to us about in running them?
Well, as you can see, because, and as you know, because the land and the water resources are connected in this region, in a way, tackling it together and realizing that there is a common challenges and that the solutions are also common becomes very powerful. And that's why this project that I was telling you about, this regional climate program, is so exciting. The countries themselves, all five countries, asked the World Bank for such a project. This was last year in May in Almaty, because they realized that they did have common problems and needed to solve them together, and they needed information to do that. All of the five countries asked for that. In terms of regional projects more generally, in terms of how they design, the biggest challenge with a regional project is to actually be flexible so that all the countries, you get a common vision, but then each of the countries can move at their own pace, because different countries have different needs and approaches, and it takes time, and you want the ones who can run to run, and you want the ones who want to go slowly to go slowly, but everybody to do it within that common vision. So that's probably the biggest thing to bear in mind. And this particular project is designed that way. So we starting with these two countries, and then the follow-up projects in each of the other countries already under preparation.
And when should we be expecting, I guess, the initial results? When do you know that it's working?
Well, we have a very good set of indicators by which to measure success. And let me tell you what they are, because I think that, in a way, tells you more about the project and what one is hoping for in the future. The first is just how much the knowledge services are used under this project, because essentially a regional coordination unit would be set up. And then the information would be available to all of the countries, as well as all of the stakeholders within a country. So, whether it's farmers, as I said, or government agencies. The second indicator is how countries are taking those knowledge services and using them at a country level in their own programs and plans. So taking that knowledge of climate and applying it. Interestingly, the knowledge is not just being generated within the project, but others would also, it would be kind of a place where one could go for climate information. But these individual investments that farmers would pilot and technologies they would pilot, doesn't matter in which country, all of the countries would learn from those pilots. But how that information makes it to their own country-led programs and plans is a measure. The third measure is how much countries take this and then work together with each other in order to maximize synergies. So that's another thing we look for. So not just at an individual within a country level, but one or two or more countries getting together to look at how they apply solutions, be it policies or whether a project is transboundary. And then the final thing is the whole idea is to attract even more information, knowledge, and money to this area. So we're going to track how much more knowledge, information, and money comes in beyond what is already being generated under this project.
The World Bank is the main facilitator of this project, right? So they are actually running it, not the countries.
The World Bank gives loans to countries. The World Bank provides support. Loans or credits, grants. It's a mixture of grants and credits in this case. The people who are doing the project are the countries.
So the technical work is carried out by the countries then?
Everything is done by the countries. Essentially, we're providing resources and we work with the countries as they carry it out and support them in their efforts. But everything is done by the countries.
As someone who's been studying this field and focusing on Central Asia, Do you see a young generation of experts like you who are focusing on these issues in the region? Because obviously for every country, you need good specialists. You need people who are going to carry out these tasks, you know, to make starting from making people aware to saving the environment. What kind of progress do you see over the years?
You're absolutely right. This is crucial because ultimately it's people that make the difference. Certainly there's been a lot of interest. I'm finding as our teams have gone out and talked about climate, and you have, I think I see quite a few on the education side, you know, much more of a focus on this. Globally, this is something we see much more of an interest in. I hope that you know, also happens in Central Asia and continues. Ultimately, it's the people. You know, if you want to make a difference, it's people that make the difference. And you need the professionals, but actually, also it's just ordinary people just understanding the need that the resources that we have are scarce and that we need to conserve and use them in the best way possible so that we can leave something for our children. And that you don't need to be an expert for.
Well, thank you.